Atlantis and the Evolution of Humanity by Richard A. Schultz and Otu Ekpo Otu.
It was morning. The villagers had just finished their daybreak meal and their devotionals to the sun who provides all. People headed out to the fields, to the temples, and to the borderlands. Artisans were completing their projects. Skywatchers were worriedly pondering the latest visitors in the daytime heavens. The sky was blue, and the winds were light. Without warning, the ground shrieked, the sea exploded, and the smoking horned dragon rose from beyond the horizon. The villagers fled in panic, while several who were prepared gathered their parcels and made their way to the high ground. The devastation was total. Very few survived. Those who did were met with joy and fear when they arrived at their new home, recounting the story of God's wrath on their village, which had once been so secure and prosperous. 3 generations later, after the latest series of floods, the descendants of the newcomers would tell of the death of the old country and its rebirth in the new land. They gazed into the stars and into their cooking fires to connect with the spirits of their ancestors and to glimpse for themselves the plan that the sun had set in motion for them. There has long been a debate on Atlantis. Did it really exist in time, or only in our minds? If it did exist, then when and where was it located? Early accounts, such as Plato's retelling of earlier traditional or oral accounts from Solon and Egyptian sources, suggest that an early, advanced, and extensive civilization once flourished on an island continent located, according to some translations, somewhere west of the Straits of Gibraltar in the Atlantic Ocean. More recent accounts, such as those of Francis Bacon and Lewis Spence, provide considerable literary detail on the location, physiography, religion, culture, and sequential destruction of the fabled continent that was said to have spanned from Europe to the Americas, with remnants apparently surviving today in the Azores and Antilles. In this podcast, we will explore several aspects of the Atlantis story. First, we discuss the concept of time in its circular and linear natures. We then review evidence bearing on Atlantis as a physical reality and as an allegory. We also look into the fabled story of the Atlantean people in relation to human evolution. We'll see that legends of a Garden of Eden and of devastating floods and other geological catastrophes may have been established in widely separated human psyches in response to dramatic changes in their environment, driven by variations in the Earth's climate, in conjunction with a natural series of cometary impact events. We then show how the esoteric theme of cyclical regeneration of civilizations that underlies the Atlantis story continues to be important into the present day. Time may be considered to be linear, cyclical, sacred, or profane. Western culture mostly considers time as linear, also referred to as profane time, having a beginning and an end. From an Eastern perspective, such as the Hindu tradition, time has a cyclical nature, made of simultaneous involution and evolution. It divides the cyclical nature of time into various periods, the Manvantara, the Kalpa, the Mahayuga, and the Yuga. A Manvantara is the period between the beginning and the dissolution of the universe. It consists of 14 kalpas or equal epochs. Each kalpa is made up of 1,000 mahayugas, with one mahayuga said to be equal to 64,800 years. Each mahayuga has four yugas, and the four yugas are again repeated in each yuga. Sacred time is time that can never be exhausted, that is by nature infinite, without a beginning or an end. According to Mircea Eliade, sacred time is irreversible, and therefore the framework of mystical and religious experience. We may say that creation, mystical allegories, and rituals are enacted in sacred time, since we can return to it endlessly, and it remains the same throughout history and for all people. According to the primordial tradition, Atlantis actually existed and was not a figment of Plato's imagination. Some of the arguments used to support the former existence of a continent of Atlantis include a chain of underwater mountains extending from north to south, known as the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, volcanic mountains on the seafloor that form the Azores and Mount Pico, vestiges of several submerged cities found near the Azores, Canary Islands, and Cape Verde Islands, fossils common to both African and American continents, religious practices of certain indigenous people in Central America, Africa, and Asia have common factors, perhaps implying a common origin, architectural similarity between pyramids of Mexico and Egypt, and the postulate of an advanced civilization prior to the Egyptians. Here in this podcast, we examine the geological arguments for a physical Atlantis. Despite considerable advances in the documentation and understanding of continental geology from Plato's time through the present day, knowledge of what lies beneath the ocean surface remained mainly conjectural until the mid-20th century. In 1915, the German geologist and meteorologist Alfred Wegener first proposed the theory of continental drift, which states that Earth's continents slowly drift around the globe. He proposed that there was a supercontinent 200 million years ago, which he named Pangaea, meaning all Earth. Pangaea later broke up into huge landmasses similar to modern-day continents. The theory was rejected at the time primarily because it lacked a convincing physical mechanism to cause continental landmasses to move. However, subsequent exploration of the Earth's ocean basins complemented Wegener's database and eventually led, by about the year 1970, to the theory of plate tectonics, which is now accepted as a fundamental canon in Earth science. According to plate tectonics, the Earth's crust is divided into large, thick plates that move atop a soft upper mantle. The continents and the ocean basins move systematically around the globe in concert with convection currents in the underlying mantle. New ocean basins are created at spreading centers, such as the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, and are recycled into the mantle at subduction zones, such as those that ring the Pacific Ocean. At the boundary of the plates, significant deformation occurs, including earthquakes and volcanoes. For example, when two ocean plates move away from each other, as occurs along the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, seafloor spreading occurs, which creates new seafloor rocks having basaltic rock compositions from magma solidifying from the hot upper mantle. When two plates converge, there are three possibilities depending on the type of crust involved. When ocean crust converges, either with another ocean basin or with continental crust, it is transported down into the underlying mantle, due to its high density, where it is melted and recycled. This occurs at a subduction zone, also known as an oceanic trench. Many of these occur, for example, in the Western Pacific, Central America, and the Mediterranean regions. When two continental plates converge, mountain ranges are created as the crust is compressed and pushed upwards, such as in the Himalayas. When two plates move horizontally, strike-slip earthquakes are produced, such as in California and in Turkey. Systematic mapping of the topography of the seafloor was conducted by the U.S. Navy during World War II. Systematic studies were also undertaken to sample and map the ages of seafloor basalts. Similarly, detailed maps of the magnetization of basalts as the rocks cooled after eruption at the mid-ocean ridges were compiled during the 1960s. Drilling of the world's oceans as part of the deep-sea drilling project begun in 1969 demonstrated a systematic increase in the age of the sediments on the seafloor, from zero at the ridge, where sediments have not yet accumulated, to a maximum at the edges of the opposing continents. The ages of the sediments, dated by fossils, are consistent with those of the underlying basaltic rocks, dated by radioactive isotopes or atomic clocks that give the elapsed time that has occurred since the rock formed. Consistent linear structures on the seafloor, called transform faults, were discovered in the mid-1960s and record the movement paths of the opposing continents, such as South America and Africa, away from the mid-ocean ridge, whose shape mirrors those of the two formerly contiguous continents. A map of the seafloor topography, called bathymetry, is now widely available. On it, the mid-Atlantic ridge bisects the Atlantic Ocean, with the seafloor becoming progressively deeper away from the ridge axis, toward the once-joined continental margins. The ridge shape can be seen to mirror those of eastern North and South America and western Scandinavia, Europe, and Africa. A similar progression can be observed at other locations, such as the East Pacific Rise, west of South America. If there were a sunken continent of Atlantis, it would be readily visible on the seafloor topography. However, none is present. Similarly, the distribution of seafloor rock ages reveals a systematic and regular progression, with zero-age rocks at the mid-ocean ridges and oldest rocks adjoining the continental margins. The age of the oldest seafloor rocks at the edges of the continents gives the date when the opposing continents were joined in the past. This age is the same on either side of the ocean. For example, the North Atlantic Ocean opened in Jurassic time about 165 million years ago, whereas the South Atlantic opened more recently at about 125 million years ago. An Atlantean continental landmass occupying any part of the Atlantic Ocean would have been revealed as anomalous ages superimposed on the pattern that is typical of seafloor ages. According to the theory of plate tectonics, continents cannot sink because they are of lower density than the underlying mantle. Displacement of such a large landmass downward would require a correspondingly large effect to be produced around it, such as upwelling magma forming major island chains or volcanic plateaus, or uplift of surrounding oceanic or continental crust. What is known about marine and continental geology at this time appears to preclude such large-scale shifts, especially in recent geologic times, for example, since, say, 50,000 years ago. Is there an alternative that could provide an explanation for legends of floods and geologic cataclysms common to cultures now located in widely separated areas on the Earth? Certainly, a legend confined to a single culture can be attributed, following the literal approach, to a local cause. One shared by cultures in a region, such as the Eastern Mediterranean, implies a regional-scale cause. However, a common legend that is found on different continents, such as the Americas, Europe, Africa, India, China, as well as on Pacific Ocean islands, implies a physical cause that is global in extent. One explanation for these recurring legends involves climatic cycles of various lengths, as recorded in the timing of continental glaciation, ice cores, tree rings, meteorological records, lake sediments, peat bogs, and atomic isotopes. A series of shorter climatic cycles of warm, wet, and cold, dry conditions is closely associated with variability in the sun's output. Longer climatic cycles are related to Earth's rotation and to its orbital dynamics around the sun, such as the 25,800-year-long Great Platonic Year, which was noted by Hipparchus in the year 130 BCE, before Common Era, corresponding to 130 BC. This precession of the equinoxes is caused by gravitational forces from the sun and the moon acting on the Earth's equatorial bulge. The sudden start of the current Holocene geological epoch at about 11,500 years before present correlates with summer at perihelion, when the Earth is closest to the sun in its orbit, and with increased levels of oceanic heating relative to today. The climate warmed to its maximum and wettest level from about 6400 to 3200 BCE, following a brief 200-year-long incursion into colder and drier conditions. The climate since 3200 BCE and the beginning of the Common Era was similar to today's, except for a brief but significant cold-dry period at 600 BCE. In an intriguing hypothesis, William Redeman has recently identified increased levels of atmospheric carbon dioxide due to deforestation in association with clearing of land for agriculture and production of lumber for buildings and fuel, and also methane, a byproduct of irrigated rice farming, from about 6,000 BCE and 3,000 BCE, respectively. Both of these greenhouse gases may have promoted global warming since that time. Periods of warmer, wetter, more clement climates favor increased vegetation, animal, and human population densities due to increased carrying capacity of a particular area. Population density declines markedly during cold, dry events, becoming restricted eventually to isolated wet oases. As a result, successive waves of hunter-gatherers and farmers spread culture and language throughout Europe and the Middle East from persistent oases like the Jordan Valley. Although asteroidal and cometary impacts in the Earth's geologic record are well documented, recent work is providing new detail on impacts occurring during recent times that have affected early civilizations around the globe. As outlined by Bruce Massey, some of these are the Altanen impact in the Southeast Pacific Ocean, dated at about 2.5 million years ago, and potentially being a trigger for global climate change at the Pliocene-Pleistocene geologic boundary. The Umm al-Bini Lake impact site in southern Iraq, which may have affected Mesopotamian cultures around 3000 BCE. The Kali impact Estonia at about 400 to 800 BCE. The Sorrente impact in central Italy about 500 AD. And the Mahuika impact on the continental shelf south of New Zealand, which appears to have generated tsunamis on New Zealand and Australia at 1450 AD, and which may also have helped trigger the Little Ice Age at that time. Several other examples that would have dramatic effects on the civilization of the time, including cometary airbursts over South America and impact events in Africa and the Middle East, are considered plausible from physical and or cultural lines of evidence. Current work has discovered an impact crater some 29 kilometers or 18 miles in diameter on the Indian Ocean seafloor, located about 1,500 kilometers or 900 miles southeast of Madagascar. Called the Burkle Crater, the effects of this cometary impact are now closely associated with the legendary Great Flood in the Africa, Middle East, India, Southeast Asia region that would now be dated, along with the crater, from a variety of sources at 2807 BCE. Because comets are usually fragmented, a string of comet fragments probably hit the Indian and Pacific Oceans at this time, causing tsunamis, fires, dust plumes, atmospheric fallout, and related environmental devastation throughout the inhabited world. Sudden and rapid rises in sea level following the last worldwide glaciation since about 12,700 BCE would have progressively flooded the then exposed continental shelves, forcing human and animal populations living by the sea to continually migrate inland. Climate shifts since that time were also known to be very rapid, from years to, at most, a few decades, implying replacement of bountiful conditions by famine and vice versa within a typical human lifespan. Combined with volcanic and earthquake activity typical of the Mediterranean, Middle East, Indian subcontinent, and Central and South America, for example, such rapid geological shifts, especially if punctuated by impact events, probably promoted legendary accounts of the destruction of lands of plenty among the former inhabitants displaced by such climate-related causes. Both Plato and Bacon used the legend of Atlantis as an allegory to promote reflection and social change. Plato sought to praise Greek civilization and to caution against its moral decline. Bacon advocated the advancement of science and technology instead of politics as a way to nudge European civilization toward a more mystical direction. He saw North America as a clean slate upon which Rosicrucian mystical ideals could form the foundation of a new culture. Both men, especially Plato, based their accounts on a mixture of historical, literary, and esoteric materials. With the fulfillment of Bacon's vision of scientific progress being based on empirical observation and facts, rather than on abstract reasoning, many people since then have taken the Atlantis story literally and have speculated upon a variety of locations and historical accounts that would fit the description of Atlantis given by Plato and Bacon. The history of the material world contains many accounts of the rise and fall of civilizations and cultures. But the Atlantis story is more than just an historical account. It is the granddaddy of rise and fall stories, intended to both caution us about moral decay of civilization and to give us hope for a future regeneration to better times. Here we examine this primordial tradition and suggest how it is unfolding today. Philosophers and mystics in many cultures paint a remarkably consistent picture of humanity's place in the universal design. First was the creation, or emanation, of an original set of beings who chose poorly, and therefore were banished from the heavenly realm. Then, the second phase began, in which these beings would atone for their choice and, after the appropriate work, rejoin their Creator. In this sense, Atlantis is just one of many expressions of a universal idea. Rosicrucians know that inner communication with the intangible universe is possible through meditation and intuition. By tapping into this undercurrent that flows through the universe and through all of humanity, that is, all those alive and all those who have gone before us, we receive impressions that we then interpret and express through the filter of our own experiences, education, culture, and biases. In particular, the record of cyclical regeneration of civilizations and ideas parallels the ideas of karma and reincarnation that are common to many philosophies and religions. Our self-expression as individuals, and in the larger sense, the collective moral state of our culture, reveal how deeply we have tapped into and aligned ourselves with the intangible universe. Plato and Bacon, like many other mystics, wanted to influence the direction of their cultures. They knew that cultures maintain a tension between the struggles of daily life and the vision of a better, easier, more ideal world. By working on two levels, the physical world and the intangible, esoteric world, they hoped to improve the mystical perception of universal principles of their citizens. This work continues today, and the Rosicrucian Order Amort, for example, plays an important role in planting the seeds for positive social change, following in the footsteps of Plato, Bacon, and many others. The Atlantean story is one of archetypes. According to the primordial tradition, Atlanteans lived in harmony with nature. Their government was theocratic and a hierarchy, reflecting divine will in earth-based government. This resonates with ideas of paradise and an earthly utopia. Primordial tradition also relates that there were four successive Atlantean civilizations that may be compared conceptually to the four yugas of the Hindus. The number four is of central importance in mystical studies. This number was highly venerated by the Pythagoreans, since, according to them, it contained all other numbers. For example, when we add the numbers up to and including the number 4, 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4, we obtain the number 10, which can be regarded as containing all other numbers, since all other numbers are multiple of these. Using the same reasoning, 10 can also be theosophically reduced to 1, symbolizing the beginning or origin. Mystically, the Atlantean story can also be interpreted as the story of cycles of human evolution, from the descent of the soul personality into matter, and its subsequent growth, maturity, and transition or physical death, to be reincarnated into another cycle later on. Our soul personality reflects the divine light of the cosmic in accordance with our degree of evolution, as the moon is a reflector of the sun's light in accordance with its phases. We may then compare the journey of the collective soul personality with that of the moon through time. Should we choose to consider time as cyclical, we can represent it as a circle. The collective soul personality, like the moon in its orbit, will begin its evolutionary journey or incarnation at birth or new moon, progress through youth or first quarter, maturity, full moon, and finally, old age and transition at last quarter, to reincarnate again in a new cycle. Atlanteans exist in sacred time, represented in their earthly expression as a cross, or symbolically as the number 4. The 4 Atlantean civilizations may represent beginning, youth, maturity, and old age or transition. The 5th Atlantean civilization may then represent a new beginning and a reincarnation of the collective soul personality. Some reflection and meditation on these associations may yield some insight into human origins and evolution. According to Hermetic philosophy, that which is below is like that which is above. The physical or new Atlantis will materialize as we as a culture recognize and realize our own paradise within.